Welcome to This Week in FX PhD, your weekly wrap-up and behind the scenes at fxphd.com.
Hi, and welcome to This Week at FX PhD. John Montgomery, joined as always by Mike. How's it going, my friend?
Fairly well. Yep, we haven't had a particularly good week, but yes.
Yeah, it's a bit of a rough week here the last week before we head off to SIGGRAPH. An incident, I guess you could say, on the one of the DLP class shoots.
Yeah, no, and we will discuss it, but the reason we want to discuss it is just, I guess, for the sort of warning or advice that comes with it. But I actually tweeted and posted a few pictures to Instagram from our shoot with a drone. So we were shooting a drone down at a place with somebody who's a certified drone operator. And really nice guy, and it's a particularly good drone, so it's quite large. It can carry a reasonable payload. It's not a small little, sort of toy one that you would get. And as is, I'm sure, the case in the US, but certainly here, you need to be certified to fly drones that are above the kind of toy level. Unfortunately, we had an accident on set. The drone came down a little sharper than we anticipated because the wind was a little strong. It wasn't unreasonable, but it was a bit strong, and it came down a little harshly, and it kind of bounced. And now this drone has a landing apparatus, so it literally has two legs that fold down underneath it and fold away to give you unrestricted view when it's in the air. But anyway, the legs that came down do have a certain amount of spring in it. As it landed rather sharply than it should, it kind of almost like hopped or bounced towards a fence, and Andrew, who was near it at that point, controlling the drone, instinctively put his hand down to stop it hitting the fence. And of course, he put his hand into the propeller blades, and that was ghastly and just horrendous. And in fact, ended up with Andrew being we had to get an ambulance, and then we had to get up to Royal North Shore Hospital, and he was in overnight and had surgery on his hand, and he's now home again. But It was ghastly. But the thing about it, there's a few things that I wanted to make a point about it. Firstly, we're just so sorry for Andrew's sake that this happened. But I don't know if you've, John, ever been on set when there's been an accident, but it is just the worst feeling. I hope you haven't.
It really, a minor accident. Yeah, we had a thing where one of the grips fell off and kind of smashed it. smashed his head a bit, actually, but it was okay, and it certainly is an experience that, really something you want to avoid, obviously, on set. But I think a lot of the key comes in being prepared and have kind of a reasonable response plan to when it happens. I think that's one of the really important things about a shoot is you have that possibility of things going wrong, and you frankly need to be prepared to deal with it should something happen.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you do things with cameras that are dangerous, not in the sense of reckless dangerous, but just they, have an inherent danger in them. We have a thing here, sort of organizational health and safety, so OHS. And the idea of that is that people should have a safe working environment. And of course, you don't tend to think of going out on a shoot with a drone as like the work environment. You tend to think about that, about not having a bad electrical system at work or not having, wet floors in a something or other. But this is exactly what it also refers to. And the thing about it, and John's absolutely right, is we often go on about how important call sheets are and pre-production planning, and that is absolutely true. But one of the ones that hopefully you never have to use, but when you do, you nearly need to, is that on the first page of your call sheet, you should have details of where the nearest hospital is, details of who to call in case of an accident, and also everybody's contact details and numbers and stuff. And the reason for that is not for the typical shoot, which never has a problem. And look, I confess, earlier in my career, I used to go on set and they would stop, and I used to do a fair amount of stuff with stunts, and stop, and we're going to go through the safety procedures. And if it was a serious stunt, I would take that really, really seriously. But if it wasn't, if it was just somebody going up on a scissor lift, I always used to roll my eyes and we'd all stand around while somebody right. gave a kind of, this is in case of anything happening, blah, blah, blah. And it just doesn't seem very cool or hip to be standing around doing a safety instruction. It feels like you're in some kind of patronizing situation where, well, obviously, blah, blah, blah. But it is, unfortunately the case, or hopefully the case, that you very, very, if ever, rarely need this to happen. But the day that it does happen is the day that that is put in place for. And in Andrew's case, it was really serious. And, you know, went back for a second surgery after that. And obviously we stopped filming. Andrew is happy for us to use the footage, though I haven't actually got that far with him yet. That wasn't a priority for us. Mm-hmm. But to give you an idea, the blades on this chopper are kind of, if they're not wooden, they look like a kind of a wood, but they're that kind of strength. And so they're basically like wooden knives flying around. And one of them embedded in a solid kind of log of wood by at least about a centimeter or half an inch when this all happened. It's just like really serious stuff. It just doesn't feel like really serious stuff when you've got a drone. Mm-hmm. And when we set up the camera so it's takeoff, we set up the camera sort of over near and everyone got back. We were doing the right thing. There was no one yelling. We weren't fighting the light. We weren't in a situation where I was saying, come on, let's just go. And Andrew was saying, well, we shouldn't fly because of the wind. And there was no sort of over arching pressure on the shoot that would cause us to take risks. And yet I have been on those shoots when that has happened. Now, if that was the case when the accident had happened, I would feel, if it was possible to feel, even worse for what happened.
Right.
So again, that's the, I guess my other point, which is that, you know, there are occasions when you just feel like you're invincible as a film crew and you've got a camera and you can just maybe sit on top of the car while we drive around the corner, or you can, you know, whatever it is, hang out the side door of a vehicle or just do something that you would never do in ordinary day life because you've got a camera and it's kind of cool. And as I say, for the 99% of the time when nothing goes wrong, you get a great shot. But for that one time, if somebody gets injured, it just isn't worth it. So yeah, this really was pretty horrendous. And if you've ever walked around trying to find somebody's partial fingers and been just, it was just sickeningly upsetting. It was just a horrendous thing to happen. Now, Andrew hasn't lost all his fingers or anything, but he has lost the ends of two of them. And we were worried that he had severed the tendons in his thumb, though that's not the case. It was just really, really badly gashed. So he's going to be, you know, he's got a permanent problem because of this. And just think about that for a second. Like, if you're on a shoot and you're getting somebody to do something, just, you know, how serious is that desire to get a shot that you might permanently injure somebody? Because that's what, you know, sometimes you're talking about.
Yeah, and this wasn't, I mean, I, you know, it is a bit, obviously, in hindsight, but, you know, preparing for a shoot like this, you'd think it was, you know, maybe a tiny bit more dangerous or something might go wrong on this situation, but not dramatically so, I think, from a standard shoot. I mean, the drones are quite common. They're used a lot. You were in a very safe park area, right? You weren't around a lot of other people, but still, something went wrong. And I think your point about always being aware, and frankly, on all shoots, being very aware and doing that, because even if you're stealing a shot, I mean, I think you mentioned, you know, if you were just, you know, leaning out the window, but even, you know, you're focusing through a camera, you're on a sidewalk stealing a shot and you just step off the curb, right? I mean, that can even be incredibly dangerous at times, and something to be aware of when you're shooting. It can be really serious business. And you know, sometimes it's easy. You're right. I'll admit it as well, Mike. I've done that eye roll thing myself on some of the safety talks on shoots in the past. But it really, I think, maybe with age or experience comes to knowledge that stuff is really important and should not be taken lightly on any type of shoot that you do.
Yeah, I guess there's some other points as well, that if you are somebody that's organizing that shoot, you have more than a passing responsibility to provide this. No one is going to say to you, hey, I'm really enthusiastic that you're doing the safety talk. But if it's your shoot, it's your responsibility. And John, this was borne out by the incident that happened with the camera assistant, I believe, who was killed not that long ago in North America. We're talking about not just the tragedy of the incident, but, you know, you could be personally, both morally, ethically, and legally liable for an incident that happens on set. And I got to say that the difference between an accident and not is so small. In our case, some kids saw the chopper and came over, and I sent Ian over and I said, hey, just get those kids, you know, to stay way, way back. You know, because you would, right? They're kids. It was sort of an obvious thing that I could imagine a kid running at a chopper. That was sort of I could imagine that. What I couldn't imagine is a chopper lands, like, what seemingly like, you know, at a safe distance, but just jumps, kind of hops effectively, dartingly towards a fence, and that someone would just instinctively, who's the operator, right? Not one of our casuals or anything, or not one of our staff that's not, just put their hand down to stop it. I mean, it's, you know, there was no way that anyone had even time to register what was happening. And I was staring right at it when it happened. I couldn't even open my mouth quick enough because it was just bomb, bang, boom, and then it was over. And that's what it's going to be. So, yeah, you know, the only thing I can say is if apart from all the legal aspects, which are very serious, and everything else, and of course, the number one concern is you don't want someone to get hurt. But just for your own sake, you just can't live with yourself if you were the one that pushed that chute that caused someone to get injured. And, you know, really, this isn't, you know, neuroscience. You know, as much as you think it's really good, important to get the shot, somebody getting injured. And look, you talk about somebody stepping off on a curb, not on a chute, but with somebody that I worked with in the industry about 20 years ago. They just decided to, you know, as you do, not cross at the lights, and they stepped up on that kind of median bit on the road, and they just slightly missed their balance and did literally step back and was killed as their head was clipped by a truck. And all it was, you know, they were just sort of, you know, that sort of half run you do across a road to get through traffic, to not have to walk up to the lights, which are only 10 yards down the road, kind of thing. And he just literally kind of overbalanced slightly and stepped back, and that one stepping back and leaning back, and his head was clipped. Now, I wasn't there for that incident, but it just seemed so absurd at the time, you know, somebody crossing the road, literally getting hit by a bus, you know, virtually that cliche. But as I say, that little stuff that happens, that's just really, really quick, that catches you off guard. And if you're young and early in your career, just I beg you, don't roll your eyes. But if you're at that point in the career that you're organizing the shoots, you must have the call sheet. You must have, if you're doing anything like stunts, a safety officer and somebody that does assessment safety risk. And, you know, this is, there need to be contingency plans if something goes wrong. And then hopefully you'll never use it. But most of the time you won't. And it's most of the time that you still have to make yourself do this stuff for the one time that that it is needed.
Yeah, it is. And here in the States, I'm not sure what the rules are, but here in the States, and it goes hand in hand with that, is insurance liability as well on top of it. It's something that you should not take lightly and say that you don't need it, because you never know. I think it's appropriate. Mike, you know, we asked before the podcast about talking about this, and like, yes, for sure, because I think it's easier to say, look at something, Mike, that you mentioned, the Sarah Jones death, right, on the railroad tracks. Some of the stuff that's coming to light on this is a sensible film shoot. This is a fairly large scale crew, experienced director experience. And there's some egregious things that happened on that, you know, such as crew members told not to go on that bridge, right? That's coming to light and so forth. And so I think you can look at that situation and go, what the heck were they doing? And then kind of, you know, potentially disregard that on the smaller shoots, but on every single time that you go out in an uncontrolled area with crew and with people who are frankly under your responsibility, you need to prepare for that. You need to do that. And I think that's why this is a really healthy and good discussion to have.
Yeah. John and I were shooting with Stu in New Zealand, hanging out at choppers, doing some incredibly dangerous stuff. And we said at the time that it was incredibly dangerous, and it was an adrenaline rush because we're blokes and we were hanging out of helicopters with cameras and stuff. And, you know, we were skimming, how high do you reckon we were off the deck on some of those shots? I mean, it was hold your breath high.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And then what, about 6 months after that, 7 months after that, there was a helicopter accident here in Australia, and a pilot just as experienced as the one we were flying with in New Zealand, and we knew both pilots, died. And they died because of a helicopter incident, in our case, in Central Australia. And we knew Gary, and we knew his wife. She'd been on FX PhD. And it was just horrendous. And the thing for me was, when you say something is dangerous, it's easy to sort of get the word dangerous and translate it to cool. Yeah. But that isn't what the word means. The word means there is a danger that something could go wrong. And, you know, it's just the odds, right? Like people go in lotteries in the hope that they'll win something when their odds are like 1 in 6 billion, 1 in 6 million. They'll go to Vegas and gamble when the odds are like, you know, 1 in, you know, maybe 100,000 that they're going to sort of hit the jackpot kind of thing. But if you think about the odds of like 1 in 100 of an accident, I mean, you're saying, well, I'm willing to put my money down that I might win in 1 in 100,000, but I'm willing to risk my life on 1 in 100. And that's, you know, for every 99 that's safe, it's one that's going to go horribly wrong. Now, I'm not saying those are the odds of an accident, but when you have an incident like that with the helicopter, it really, I mean, I honestly questioned whether I would do that same New Zealand shoot again. Had I think today I would really be reluctant to do, I don't know, what did you?
No, I think we followed sensible procedures. I think we were very much strapped in and very safety conscious. He was not a cowboy pilot, as with the, I mean, it is, you know,
well,
it's
an
acceptable,
right?
Neither of them were, exactly. I didn't mean to imply that someone else was. So I think that it was a rush, and it was, but I mean, it was something that was incredibly useful, frankly, for us from an education standpoint, for our members from a standpoint as well. And I do think that we took, you know, appropriate precautions in our preparation for it. But it's always, I think that there's an understanding, there needs to be an understanding that this is not something to be taken lightly. I mean, we were seriously strapped in, wouldn't have the door open, right? We were not phoning it in on that, I think. Yes, there was a danger, but man, I mean, sometimes I feel riding my bike to work, Mike. I shouldn't tell you that, but...
Yeah.
But, you know, there was danger all around us, and I think that we were sensible on that shoot. But, yeah, I mean, something to certainly consider, I think.
Well, anyway, the point is, leaving aside those occasions where you are just putting yourself and your best friend at risk, there's you get back to the crew, and as you were saying with the Sarah Jones thing and the whole nature of the shoot, you know, there is a really very wafer-thin difference between resiliently safe and somebody just cutting a corner, and you don't want to be on the wrong side of cutting a corner. That's for darn sure. And also, it's your responsibility. And one of the things on our FXPHD shoot is it literally says right up front is that if anyone sees anything they think is unsafe or uncomfortable, they should bring it up. And that's a pivotal point, because if somebody was to bring something up because they're not safe and comfortable doing it, then you must adhere to that. You can't force them to do this. Isn't like a military exercise. Mm-hmm. And more to the point, you should encourage people to speak up, because that's sometimes the other problem you have with safety, is that people sort of assume that everybody else is kind of okay with it. So I guess I should just go along with it because I'm the guy that doesn't want to seem to be not a team player. But yeah, I think A-type personalities, people in the film industry and blokes, is a pretty, you know, gung-ho category of sort of, I don't know, can-do attitude that
I would call it dangerous.
I've got to say, it was really funny. In Australia, as I said, we had the OH&S phenomenon. And I remember when they first started to sort of notice the film industry, and they'd be like, you know, if you're a guy in construction or whatever, and you were going up on scissor lifts and do all this kind of stuff, you'd have hard hats and, you know, like safety wires. And in those days, that none of that was in the film industry. And I remember somebody saying that they were, you know, they were there when an OHS person came to film a video for the government on safety. And they were just standing there stunned at the work practices of the film industry, because all these guys were just hanging off the rafters, hanging lights and doing stuff. And they were like, what are you people doing? Where's the safety harness? Where's the... And they're like, this is pretty much standard practice in the film industry, love. And they were like, stop. We're not having a safety video made by a bunch of people that are about to die. I mean, that was obviously a few years ago and it has changed a lot. But yeah, anyway, as I say, it is uncool to worry about safety. It's probably uncool to talk about it, but I don't give a damn. And certainly we have just nothing but whatever for like tremendous, I don't know what the word is really, but sympathy for what happened with Andrew and his hand. I mean, it's just ghastly. And it really, honestly, if I wasn't already there, you know, I just remember thinking as I was sitting in the emergency room, I just never want to feel this again. Mm-hmm. I just, whatever happens, I just don't want to feel this again. This is not fun. And yes, but anyway, there you go.
And that's, and that comes from doing things right too. So that's, you know, that's, it's not a good situation, but in the end, I'm glad that it seems, as considering the possibilities of what could have happened to Andrew, I'm glad that he is doing better. And it wasn't more severe. So anyway, so on a cheerier note, I guess, or a more optimistic note, looking forward to SIGGRAPH Asia next week. my friend?
Yes, I have several hurdles to get to between now and then. Mm-hmm. And we will be making some announcements at the time of SIDGRAPH Asia. So if you are an FX PhD listener that thinks, I wonder what the guys have been up to behind the scenes. Why has Mike been running off and doing Cert 4 qualifications? What's going on with all that stuff that they've been doing at the sidelines? We have a fairly big announcement, unprecedented, I would say, in the history of FX PhD that we'll be making at the beginning of December. That's all I'm going to say at this point. Might tease it a bit more in the beginning of next week, but you don't have long to wait.
Yep.
This is a very well-kept secret. So no one has mentioned, done, leaked, or done anything about this yet. But it's all good news. It's not...
That's because everyone who is working on it is trapped in a locked room. It's in a radio-free zone, so they have no communication with the outside world. We take them
Which
food.
Makes it kind of hard having not any internet.
Yeah, exactly. So.
No food.
No, we take them food. Come on.
Oh, okay.
We're not... But yes, it's really some exciting news coming out next week at SIGGRAPH. So looking forward to lifting the veil, so to speak.
I think we've been planning this for like five months.
Yeah.
Yeah, 5 months of stuff involving many people, people that have never before been involved with PhD. Yes. So you know, just a little bit of a leak, a little bit of a start. See, for those of you loyal, listen to I was going to say the DOD, we changed the name, didn't we? This week in FX PhD, yeah. But yes, you won't trap me in the forums. I'm not going to let fly, but I will say it's not a trivial thing. It's not like, we have some new courses next term that we haven't had before. It's way in a different league than that.
Yeah, it certainly is. So, and those of you who do listen to the DOD, thanks for your patience. We figured out this bug that was causing some podcast episodes to not appear in the feed, and we believe that squashed that, or at least know how to deal with it. So work around in the meantime until I fix it. Something happened, obviously, in the website switchover, so that's great. I also get word from Ryan today that RenderMan 19 has been released. Those of you who've been members have had access to the beta of that over the last several months, as well as access to Christos's course, which is actually incredibly brilliant. I think they're getting up to speed, but the full package is now on the VPN and available. So if you want to get that installed, go and check out the knowledge base. To my memory, Mike, that's under the members tab. I'll look to make sure, but yes, those of you who are members know where that is. It's not, it's under resources, the knowledge base. Basically check out the RenderMan 19 pages. They're actually already up there.
Yes, yes. Somebody had a question whether or not we'd be able to get Traktor 2, and I'm still looking into that, the new version of Traktor. But that was a question posted in the forums. And I did a thing on Traktor, and I think it's an amazingly cool piece of software. But yeah. John, what have you been up to? Well, I've been suffering with the horrendous nature of shoots.
I've been suffering with the horrendous nature of PHP programming and website coding. I jest because it's actually been a bit of fun, actually, I have to say. In addition to stuff coming up in December, we're doing some new stuff in January as well. Related to the site. I'll actually have a call out for some beta testers to help check that out, some of that out in the next couple of weeks. I've also been busy doing that, as well as works hand in hand, though, really nicely with the SysAdmin 203 course that I'm teaching this term. And there have been some good questions in the forums, as well as email. I've been helping people out on the side as well with problems as they run into them. But I think it's been a good response and fun. But for now, I'm getting ready for the holiday weekend. Our guys are off here in the States on Thursday and Friday of this week for the Thanksgiving holiday. It's quite a big holiday in the States. I believe it's related
I forget that. Yeah, I'm because we have no Thanksgiving. I completely blanked on. Sorry.
Yeah,
what is the customary greeting? Happy Thanksgiving.
Yes, Happy Thanksgiving. Yes, it is. And basically, it's a celebration of when the pilgrims came, they set up the stores, and so they could have the stores open on Sunday, because previously all the stores were closed on holidays so people could spend time with their family.
Now, was there an African-American tradition that made it Black Friday?
Yeah. I'm sure that ties in. I don't know the history of that, but yes, it's apparently Thanksgiving is related to pilgrims and commerce and good sales. So.
Right, and emails, because I've been getting a lot of emails this morning about Black Friday.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's great. So it's some kind of national recognition of African-American shoppers.
And yes, and it's all about spending spending your hard-earned income, not saving, and spending less time with family, I think, which are all really things to celebrate.
Right. Yeah, I do forget about Thanksgiving. It's
it is actually a big holiday here. It's probably one of our largest holidays. In the way, it's the largest in travel. Just to give people an example of how big it is, it's the largest travel day of the year. Like, I'm actually working from home today because I don't even want to be out in the friggin' road, in the traffic. More people fly through the airports in the next couple of days than they do around the holidays or Christmas. So it's partly because of the tight, compressed schedule, but it really, truly is one of the most observed holidays, I would say, here in the States. So. I jest about the origins of it, just what it's become. But it is a large and significant holiday. I would say it's certainly bigger than Easter. I know Easter for those in the UK and Australia is very big. And this
though how we got from Christ to chocolate eggs is still
okay. So there's a little bit there. Jump. Okay, yeah. There's a little jump there as well in that holiday. But yeah. So anyway, those guys are taking the days off. We'll be answering support, but it might just take a little bit longer to do. I'll keep an eye on that for the guys. Give them some time off as well because they've been working hard, as everyone has been. So.
So happy Thanksgiving. I'm going to see you next in Shenzhen. Hopefully with some kind of I'm flying through the night economy, so I'm going to need large amounts of some kind of Chinese alcohol to.
Well, I'm bringing you a bottle of Almendrado. It's just sitting on my desk. I did procure that yesterday, so I got that. It's sitting along with the 40,000 other things you've asked me to bring. Well, it's the camera gear we talked about last week, right? So it's FX PhD stuff, and but. Yes, a little bit of Almendrado for you, which I'm more than happy to bring. I mean, just, you know what it does, Mike? By having all that room that I'm bringing, it actually leaves a gaping hole for me to fill up when I drop by Tokyo on the way home. So I say thank you, my friend, for having me.
Okay, I'm going to go, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks, guys, for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Okay. Or maybe, yeah, we'll talk to you as soon as we can. We'll say that. Okay. We'll try and get something done. See you guys. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is copyright FX PhD.